Welcome to It's Who You Know, the podcast, bridging the gap between Jewish leaders and those who follow them. Gain insight from Jewish professionals who make the decisions that influence your Jewish world.
Welcome to It's Who You Know, the podcast. This is your host, Michelle W. Malkin. And my guest today is Lisa Hills, who's the co-founder of Hirsch Hills Consulting, where she specializes in leading successful organizational change, developing team talent, creating high-performing teams, designing strategies for individuals and team success. With over 25 years of experience as an organizational strategist and expert in talent management, Lisa has served as Assistant Dean of Student Affairs and Director of the Hyatt Career Development Center at Brandeis University. She was a founding member of the Bridging Education and Technology, BEAT, program, a partnership between the City of Waltham, Brandeis University, and local technology corporations. She has held numerous leadership positions throughout the Greater Boston Jewish community, including Temple Emmanuel of Newton, Combined Jewish Philanthropies, Pro's Dora Advisory Board, and was a co-founder of Jewish Vocational Services Women's Mentoring Network. The reason I'm bringing Lisa on the program today might come as a shock, is to talk to her about talent management and specifically how we can look beyond someone's job description or our preconceived notions of what a job should or shouldn't be or what the person before them did or didn't do and better play to the strengths of your employees to have better results both for them, for you, and the organization as a whole. I'm sure there will be much more we'll have to discuss, but for now, I would just like to welcome Lisa to the program.
Thank you very much, Michelle, for inviting me to be a guest on your podcast.
Wonderful. So we'll start, as we always do, Lisa, with just your story and how you got into this work.
Thank you, Michelle. Well, I think when I think about my story, I feel very fortunate that for over 25 years, I've really been able to integrate my passion and my personal interests with my professional experiences. And I think for me, very often the lines between my volunteer and my professional worlds have been very blurry. For more than two decades, I've been doing management consulting, as you mentioned, working with clients across sectors on issues like organizational strategy and change, talent development, building high-performing teams, and effective and strategic communication. And at the same time, I've had the privilege of being deeply involved with the Jewish community in Greater Boston, something that's very meaningful to our family. And I've had the wonderful opportunity to serve in significant leadership positions, whether it's been president of one of the largest conservative synagogues, I've chaired many strategic planning initiatives, most recently for Mechana Yavna. I've also been involved in numerous searches for senior positions, whether it's for clergy or for new executive directors at the helm of major organizations. And I feel like that's really bring my professional experience and skill to my volunteer world.
So I'm going to steal a question from one of my other favorite podcasts, Make Me Smart, and ask you, you know, what are some things that you thought you knew when you started this work that you later found out was maybe not necessarily true?
Well, I think much of the work that I do, the common thread is change and organizational change. And I think if you're a person who welcomes change and sees it as opportunity, change is very exciting. But most people see change as stressful, as anxiety producing, as evaluative or judgmental of what their work that they've been doing. Mm-hmm. And I think that one of the mistakes organizations make is thinking that change is going to come fast and be easy. Right. And I think one of the things I've learned over time is how intentional and deliberate you need to be and all of the steps along the way to really make meaningful, purposeful change. And not just change because it's kind of trendy to do something different, but what is core to the organization and who's the talent that you need? What are the skills and the experiences you need to make successful organizational change, to guide an organization from where it is today to where you want to be?
So when you started, you thought that would be a lot easier for people?
I think that when you're very excited and enthusiastic right. about what you're doing and you think this is going to be great and you say, trust me, you're going right. to love this. And then you realize that people are not on board. I also think along with that, there's always a gap between leader and vision and everyone else who has to actually implement the change. So I think many of us, again, have been part of these exciting brainstorming sessions or strategic planning retreats or visioning meetings where you come up with great themes. And the reality is you have to go back to your job. People feel very overwhelmed by how much is on their plate already. So the fact that you have a visionary, charismatic leader saying, this is going to be great. Most people are thinking either one, I'm not sure what he or she is even talking about. It sounds great, but I really don't know what that means.
Right.
And second, I don't know what that means to me and my job every day. Mm-hmm. And so I think over the years, I've learned how you really need to engage people, what the steps are along the way of making organizational change, and how much care and thought needs to be given to individual jobs that the sum of those actually lead up to change. It's not just vision at the top, but it's all the little pieces that go into making the change that support that vision.
Well, it also seems like specifically when it comes to change, trying to make it cultural, right? Trying to make it part of an ongoing process, right? You don't do a strategic planning and then you have a plan and then you implement it and all is well, right? I feel like planning is always something that, you know, we might do SMART goals or we might do things like with our staff, but to really do intentional planning ongoing regularly doesn't really seem to be something that we do very well.
I think you've raised a couple of good points. First, planning in general. I think when we take groups to do an offsite, the expectation is so high that we're going to do everything, you know, in that one day. And, you know, my approach to strategic planning is that it should be a living, evolving document, that it should be a guidepost for how the organization moves forward, and that it needs continual revisiting and discussion. So I think, you know, you're totally spot on about that. The other thing is culture. You really have to understand what the culture of an organization is. And that's really where change comes from. And I've seen new people at the helm be very frustrated early on because they come in with great ideas, thinking they're going to be able to bring these organizations along. And they underestimate how entrenched people are in a culture, how committed they are to the way things were done, and how respectful you need to be to that. And so great change comes from really understanding the essence of what has made a place great and how to reinterpret that and reimagine that for the future. So when new leaders really honor the culture of an organization and what's been great, and then engage people who have been there about how we can continue to imagine and interpret that core essence of the mission, that's when you get really strong and successful organizational change. I've seen leaders, especially clients I worked with, you know, at certain times, dot-coms were notorious for bringing very enthusiastic, charismatic founders who had big vision and no implementation, no execution.
Right.
And again, great change comes in that translation of vision into operation.
And it's ironic to me, I think, because, you know, those leaders before us came into a situation and said, I have ideas and ways to change and implemented new things. And so they did exactly what, you know, today's generation is trying to do. But then it's kind of hard to let go once you've, you know, implemented change and been influential in a community to say, oh, well, now we're going to go in a different direction because it's a different time. And try and find a way to embrace that change that doesn't negate the work that you did and the time that you did it, but that people are trying to build and continue that legacy.
I think that's a very important challenge. Something I talk about a lot right now is the fact that we might have as many as 5 generations in a workplace. Mm-hmm. And so how do you leverage the institutional history and the knowledge and give real credence to that, while making sure that we can really attract younger people who want to come with new ideas, new ways of doing things. We want to be inspiring to them. We want to support their new ideas. And that is the challenge for many organizations today. How do you meld people and take that sort of span of 50 years difference and really use that as a strategic advantage? Mm-hmm. And that is a challenge. And I agree with you. We want to always be thinking about new ideas and new direction while not feeling like we're disrespecting people who have been there a long time, who have, you know, just committed their entire careers to organizations. And that's very, very common, especially with many of the organizations in the Jewish community. We love that we have great continuity. That's an important theme for us. At the same time, how do we engage younger generations who come with different motivation, different passion, different drivers? And that's the thing that you need to key in when you're managing people, when you're leading organizations. You want to key into personal motivation and passion. And that's how you get great organizations. That's how you develop talent. But it's a challenge because each person's motivation is very different and what's driving them.
Yeah, that's an excellent segue to focusing a little more on talent management. A lot of your professional work has been in the for-profit world, but of all the differences between for-profit and nonprofit, I think talent management is one that is very similar. You know, where money is not a significant motivator, as I've kind of talked about a few times on this program, it only goes so far. If anything, it could be a bit detrimental. And trying to think about the way that we keep our talent happy, the way that we help them feel purposeful in their work and have some autonomy in their work and build some mastery in their skills. So I often come across a situation where it's you hire a person because, oh, they seem so creative and interpersonal. And then you ask them to pull reports and they can't do that. Or, you know, you ask them to do very technical things and they struggle with that. And you think, well, that's the job. Like, you should be able to do that without kind of being more mindful of like, okay, what is this person's strengths? How do we create a team around them to support those strengths and say, it's okay if this piece of your job description you're not that great at. And either we help you develop that skill or we help supplement that strength somewhere. So I'd love to just kind of hear a little bit of your experience and kind of how you've helped managers understand their talents and kind of building those teams.
I think that all employers, whether they're in the profit world or the not-for-profit world, invest a great deal of resources, time, money, in hiring people, and insufficient resources are devoted to onboarding and developing talent. We spend a lot of time focused, as you said, on people's skills. What have you done? What are your experiences? Can you do this job? But there are all these intangibles when you get to the workplace, when you hire somebody. One of them has to do with real culture and fit. And the other, as you touched on, is sort of those motivators. And really trying to understand what the person's expectation is of what that job is going to be. And what the job really is when you hit the ground,
there's often
a gap. Also, during the interview process, it's like dating. You know, you are trying to sell this opportunity to the candidate as a great place to work. And the candidate is just thinking, will I get the job? Will I get the job? So the honest conversation about what it really means to work in this place day in and day out often doesn't happen until somebody starts. And very often there's a mismatch. And it requires managing and it requires helping somebody in terms of the onboarding. A lot of the work that I do for organizations in the Jewish community is helping new executive directors, new clergy, people who are new in their leadership roles, think about how to be successful. And I think, again, we underinvest in realizing how important that is. First of all, people in a new job need to understand sort of what I call the secret code of an organization. So every organization has those things that are obvious and concrete about how work gets done. But then there are all the intangibles about how people work and communicate and problem solve and what the expectations are. And very often that's not articulated until somebody isn't performing in the way that was expected. And then it becomes around a performance issue. Often I see that things that are flagged as performance issues are really just a case of somebody needing some guidance and support and direction. Everybody in a new job needs to have a toolkit. They need to have go-tos. And I like to think about them as needing several kinds of go-tos, especially in senior positions. You need those go-tos that are by formal position. So if you're the new person at the helm of an organization, your chair of the board or other people on your senior team. But you also need those sort of informal go-tos, those sort of influencers that really understand how things work. And that's a role I often play for people. That person that I say, you can ask me anything offline,
right,
and it'll be between us. Because you need that person who can whisper in your ear and say, here's what you really need to know before you walk into that first board meeting, or here's what you need to know before you meet with so-and-so, or when you bring your team together. So very often we hire somebody. Again, we put months or even a year or more into a search process. And then the first day on the job, we kind of leave that person to sink or swim on his or her own. And again, I really feel like how we onboard and being very deliberate about somebody's first week, month, and 90 days on a job can really tee that person up for success.
Mm-hmm. And I think a piece of it is, you know, a lot about understanding yourself and your work style, right? I'm lucky to have done a graduate program where they helped me think about this, you know, very intentionally. But, you know, as somebody who's managing people, if you can do the work of a reflection and really saying, okay, what do I need from my employees? I need them to keep me in the loop on everything, or like, I need them to come to me when they're having issues, like, to try and kind of figure out for yourself, like, what do you need from your employees for them to be successful, for you to be successful? And as employees, you know, what do you need, right? What kind of helps you be successful? And being able to communicate that, I think, is huge. I don't think many people can. I don't know if I necessarily can, but being able to kind of do that, thinking about what you need, I think could be huge in how we communicate with each other.
I think it's so important. And I think just asking questions and creating the time to ask people questions and also to explain what you need from them. You raise an excellent point, because most managers just assume that the person hired is going to get it. And so when you say to people, here's how I like to communicate, or if you need to reach me, or even simple things, communication is such a stressful part of people's jobs today. Between email, texting, cell phones, you know, people ask me all the time. They will say, my boss texts me on Saturday nights at 11 p.m. Am I supposed to be checked?
Right.
She expects that I comply. Yeah. And so being deliberate and saying, you know, well, I'm often up at 5 o'clock in the morning and I'm sending emails, but I don't expect you to. But here's what I do expect. That helps people so much. I mean, honestly, because a lot of the frustration that people have around work has to do with those kinds of tactical things, not really the bigger things. And so if we can demystify some of those small things for people, it really helps them. I think, and then there is that bigger question of talent development. And I do think that you have a responsibility to have those conversations. And that's different than performance feedback. Especially when you are engaging younger people to the workplace and it's his or her first job. And in first jobs, I always tell people you're learning something. Even if the work you're doing isn't of specific interest, you're learning a lot of other things about the workplace. But there is a responsibility on the employer's part, on the manager's part, to have that conversation. Make sure that you're checking in. I would say the number one thing most new hires tell me they're looking for is a mentor. Now, that's a lot of pressure actually on an employer to feel like I also have to mentor this person.
Right, right.
But to me, that means they're really looking for a guide or a coach or somebody that's going to give them feedback. Remember, younger generations are used to 24/7 feedback, they're used to instant response. So when they're working for somebody who doesn't reply to them for a week, or they haven't heard anything about the quality of their work, you can't wait for the annual performance review to give that person feedback. You need to really be helping that person along the way by giving more informal, frequent feedback. And I think that really helps people. It's very reassuring to them and they can course correct.
Well, I think another interesting point is when you're managing people, you're finding a way to communicate that you're open to that, right? That you're open to the feedback, that you're willing to take it in, because you don't want your employees to be afraid of you and, you know, afraid of saying, hey, a text at 11 o'clock at night on a Saturday is like not cool, you know, or not kosher. Like if you could just send me an email, then I'll be able to get back to it, you know, first thing Monday morning. That's a hard conversation to have, right? Especially in a new position. Like everybody wants it to work out. And whether you're afraid of your boss or not, right? To say to them, you know, hey, that thing you did, like, wasn't really that helpful, right? Like the way that you presented that, or I kind of need a little bit more of this. Like it's hard as a new employee to push back a little. So how do you as a manager make that space available to say, hey, like in your first 30 days, if there's like something that I'm doing that's, you know, not kind of rubbing you right, or that you're not comfortable with, or, you know, please let me know so that we can kind of both be adjusting our working styles. Because I also think manager, especially if you've been in the position for a long time, right? You're a little more set in your ways of how you manage your employees. Absolutely. And now you have a new person, a new personality coming in. You know, how do you be open to those conversations and allow for that space to happen when you have someone new?
So I think that, you know, if you have a manager like you who says, please tell me what I could do to help you, or please ask me questions, it's great. But most people are, first of all, super busy. And second, you've hired this person, so you've been without this person. Chances are you are so happy and grateful and just hope this person shows up and can just get to work and hit the ground running. And you really don't have the luxury of time to really get them up to speed. But again, sometimes people start right out of the gate great. But more often, there are some bumps at the beginning. And there's often that kind of gasp of, did I make a mistake in hiring? And I think that's where quickly meet the person saying, let's just go over how I can be helpful, and being really inviting and intentional about that is very important. New hires will say to me all the time, can I ask my boss? Can I say this? They are afraid. There is a power difference. They're in a new job. They want it to work. They're nervous. And I say, here are some ways you could do things. You can check in. You can say, you asked me for this. I just want to clarify that this is what your expectation is. Right. Or I've noticed that you do the following. Is this what you're expecting me to do? Ask some clarifying questions because your manager will respond to that. I do think it's great for new hires to have a weekly check-in time, even just 15 minutes, where it's a weekly opportunity, especially early on, where that person can ask questions. Sometimes people tell me, I haven't been able to move my work because I need to talk to my boss and my boss has been traveling and or he never replies to me right away. So I think having that as sort of a safety valve is very helpful to people, and having some structure. Also helping people to find other go-tos, you know, ask questions of people when you're in a new job. Notice how things get done. There are these, again, informal influencers and stakeholders in an organization. Very often the CEO's assistant is a great go-to person because he or she knows how things really get done in a place.
Right.
But you really have to be open and looking and really thinking through these things. It's very difficult to just land in that job and get started. And again, in the Jewish world, many not-for-profit organizations don't have the luxury of formal training and onboarding programs. So you do have to kind of get in there and learn the ropes. Also reach out to people that you know in other places who you might get good insight and you could run a scenario by. Again, I'm often a go-to for people. They call, they say, I just started a new job. You have to help me figure this out.
Right.
And it is a puzzle or a mystery. Understanding culture also, you mentioned that earlier, and how things get done, those intangibles of work, the culture of a place, everything from what time people arrive to what they wear to do they communicate via phone or email or in person, those kinds of things really help people to be successful. And no one tells you about those.
Right. And it seems like it's part of that planning stuff we were talking about with strategic planning, but, you know, being very mindful of how you're onboarding somebody and thinking about these things of like, what do I need to communicate to this new person? My first day of one of jobs that I've had, the person who was training me basically spent the whole time talking badly about the organization and how messed up it was. And then at the end of the day said, I hope you come back tomorrow. And I was like, wow, okay. Like that says to me a little more about you than it does about the organization. But a little bit of that was setting me up to understand the culture, not necessarily in the most positive way, but, you know, in a way that I wouldn't have gotten if it was all sunshine and roses, right? Which is, I think, most people's first days. So I got a little more, you know, behind the scenes culture than maybe I would have liked to on my first day. But trying to really think about like, what is the reality and how can I communicate that in a way that doesn't scare the person or that they can, you know, help them to be successful in their work.
I think your example is probably more common than most would even recognize.
And oh, good.
I think people will say to me, what should I have asked in an interview that would have let me know that? And I think during the interview process, as I said before, we don't ask those things. So then I think now with the perspective of experience, you probably could have said to her, well, how have you been successful here? Given the challenges that you're describing to me, how could I be successful? Where have you found opportunities to make a difference or do the kind of work that you're passionate about? And knowing that every place has its pros and cons, I think very often people are deflated in their first day or their first week of work. And it's so disappointing. I talk about all the time, you spend all this time courting someone and wanting them to take the offer. And then you show up and I hear all the time, there was nowhere for me to sit. They didn't have my laptop. I didn't have the password. I couldn't get into the building.
The desk was dirty.
I had no one to eat lunch with. So I think, you know, again, I really build in with anybody that I've been involved in the hiring of a very robust onboarding process. Again, depending on the scope of the job, but when you're bringing somebody who's going to be at the helm of a major organization, you really need to think about how you want to tee that up for that person to have great success. And that includes clearing any obstacles out of their way before he or she takes that position. And I am a big believer in that, to let the board and let the search committee and the other senior management team do the heavy lifting so that when this new person starts, they have every opportunity to be successful. Again, that's not something that happens all the time. And sometimes, of course, these situations are complicated, but I'm always asking search committees and boards that I work with, you know, are we creating, first of all, a job description that's realistic? Are we setting this person up for success? And are we giving this person everything this person needs to really be successful? And again, you see, we write job descriptions for people who, you know,
we talk about job descriptions.
You know, we want somebody who's both very external and charismatic and will spend all of their time building visibility for the organization and building relationships. And at the same time, we want that person to be a strong internal manager, bring great management skill to the organization. So I know I've been on many committees when I hear what they're looking for and I hear what we ask candidates and I say, wow, I would never get hired for that position.
Right.
So I think we want to be realistic and make sure we create jobs that people actually can be successful in.
Right. I feel like there needs to be a revolution in job description creation. And I know, you know, Hillel does a good job and there's kind of been a shift to being creating them more as like a, you are this person and we are this person. And, but like the generic, like these are your responsibilities. And this is, and I've talked on this program before that I've never gone to a job and that my job has been just what was on the paper, the job description. But trying to be a little more intentional about what it is that you're looking for and who it is that you are and how do you communicate that on paper that's not this traditional way that doesn't really communicate. Like, don't tell me that I have to, you know, take care of the finances of invoices. Like, is that really like the thing that you want to communicate to me that's an important skill, you know, that I need to have in order to apply to this, or really understanding, you know, you are going to be, you know, an intricate person on a management team to pull together our donors. I mean, like just ways that we can communicate in a more realistic way what this position is, what our organization is and does, and what you're looking for, which I think is hard. So people are busy and they default to the, you know, standard template of qualifications and experience and responsibilities and your little bio, you know, the same kind of template. I don't know if you've seen good job descriptions out there that really do that.
Well, I think, again, there are two elements. There one is the basic skills and experience. So, you know, is there a specific skill area that you do need from this person? And I think to your point, most interviewing comes around asking questions that relate to skill and experience. I think it's more important actually when you interview somebody to, first of all, explain to them, let them have a bigger sense of the context and the framework in which he or she will be working. So that it's not just a job, a very task-oriented job, but they do see how their roles will fit within that larger organizational mission. And I think that's important regardless of what position you're hiring for, whether it's an administrative role, a receptionist role, or the CFO. I think they need to understand the mission and the context, and a little bit about how that position fits within the overall organizational strategy. Second,
I just wanted to add into that, and also like where the organization is, right? Is it growing? Is it shrinking? Right. Are there like significant challenges, right? Yeah.
So important. And I'm glad you mentioned that because I have had people take jobs, including president of colleges and universities, and tell me that they were unaware of the financial situation, the reality of the enrollment situation until they stepped into that job on the first day. No one really was transparent. And I think that's very important. And again, because depending on where that organization is, it really informs the kind of person you need to hire for that moment, especially at more senior levels. So I think that's one piece. The second piece that you mentioned is how do you really get at these things in an interview? In an interview, you really should be trying to get to know that person, not just hearing a regurgitation of what's on a resume, but what motivates you? What do you feel proud of? What have you looked back on and learned from? I love to ask questions about, you know, tell me a time you worked as a member of a team and what your role was. Tell me something that you're very proud of that you didn't work. What's challenging for you? Are there parts of jobs you've had in the past that you don't like doing? When you've worked with great people, what made them great in your mind? What's an example of a person that has managed you and that was a successful relationship? So really getting to understand more about what motivates this person. Then do they have the organizational, analytical, interpersonal skills, which is what most job descriptions sound very generic. Right. And at the beginning, most people spend their time doing that very last line on a job description, all other responsibilities aside.
So, right. Oh, my.
So I think, you know, and you want to know, do you need somebody who's going to be more flexible and fluid and can have a comfort with ambiguity based on where this organization is? Or do you need somebody who's a very focused individual contributor? And those are very different kinds of people. So bringing one and thinking that person is going to, well, they'll just adjust or adapt, that doesn't usually happen, even with great managing and coaching and mentoring. You know, I love to hire people who have a lot of passion and enthusiasm and excitement for the organization, for the mission, for the purpose of what we're doing, and hope that we're going to grow them and develop them. And when you get raw talent that's excited and engaged, and you invest a little in them and you nurture them, that's where you see great lift. So I never worry about hiring people for stretch. In fact, earlier in your career, you should hire talent that's going to stretch because that's where you get the greatest lift from people. But you have to be willing to support that. One of the tools that I've used for a long time is a predictive analytic tool around talent. And I love it because it has a dimension to it that focuses in on styles and preferences, communication, problem solving, teamwork. And it has a second dimension that's just about culture. And those are the things that are the unspoken things, the motivators, our values that we bring to an organization that nobody ever asks us about. Very often people will say to me, I hired this person, I thought she was going to be great, and there's just something nagging at me. And it's that, you know, I don't know if she's going to be a great fit. And it's that fit that really has to do with culture and values and not around skills and experience. And when we can really understand what's motivating somebody and what they value, that's wonderful in terms of mentoring them. It's wonderful in terms of aligning them with the organization. You know, when you have somebody where the skills are there, but then they're aligned with the organization around values and culture and mission, that's where you get great traction from someone. That's where you get great fit.
You've been listening to It's Who You Know, the podcast. I'm your host, Michelle W. Malkin. This episode has been made possible through the partnership with American Hebrew Academy in Greensboro, North Carolina. This international Jewish college prep boarding school implements a holistic curriculum with a purposeful 1-to-3 teacher-student ratio to ensure the highest quality education. You can learn more about their educational philosophy at AmericanHebrewAcademy.org. Before returning to my conversation with Lisa, I'd like to take a moment to introduce you to the guest for our next podcast episode. Leon Weiner Dow is a research fellow and a member of the faculty at the Shalom Hartman Institute, as well as rabbi and educational director of the Havruta Gap Year Program. He discusses with me how our organizations utilize the Jewish aspect of our work in bringing spirituality and learning into our cultures. Here's a clip from our upcoming conversation.
So I think that you're right, that part of what it means to be a Jewish professional is to take that responsibility seriously. That's very difficult to do because life is very demanding, and we have family and we have children and we have friends and we want to have time to ourselves and we have work, and the work itself is very demanding and taxing. And then to add to that the additional sense of responsibility or burden that I have to somehow be learning things. But I think that in a deep level, those are the moments of raising our heads up and looking and getting inspired and reorienting ourselves and regetting our bearings. Those are those kind of formative moments that then not just sustain us, but really direct us in our work and keep us from losing track of the initial ideals that brought us to what we're doing.
Be sure to listen to the rest of my conversation with Leon in our next episode of It's Who You Know. But for now, back to Lisa. I mean, I just feel like, you know, when you get to a point where you're like, this person's like, you know, really struggling in, you know, this area or that area, at what point is it, let's try and work with them and understand them and adjust maybe my expectations or their expectations, try and maybe get a little more support for them in this area or that area? And how much of it, you know, at what point do you throw your hands up and say, personalities are too clashing, not really like performing at all well in any areas, and it's time to let them go? How do you kind of recognize when to bolster in areas and push and try to develop them in the way that they are excellent? And at one point you say, it's just not working.
I always feel very responsible to people that I've hired. And I feel like organizations need to give people a chance. They need to give them the skills or the coaching or whatever they need. But at some point, when you see that there's just a real disconnect, I think you need to be giving that person that feedback and having those conversations. So it really becomes more of a mutual decision that this is not a good fit. Mm-hmm. When it is cases like that, where this person just doesn't get it, they just don't understand the culture, they don't understand what the mission of the organization is, you know, you're holding your breath every time they're going to get on the phone or they're going to email somebody. And then it's not just a matter of giving them the sort of fine-tuning coaching, but there's a huge disconnect. I think you do people, it's more respectful to people to say, this is not a good fit, we're trying, rather than string people along. Or what we, most of us tend, because of how much there is on the plates and how much work we have, we tend to manage performance issues by avoidance, which means we either give more work to other people, we work around this person. And, you know, that feels terrible to the person who's there as well. Most people want to do a good job. They take pride in their work. We want to help them be successful. So if it's really not working, it feels very discouraging to somebody to every day come in and be told, I know you worked hard writing this, but the writing isn't clear. I need you to rewrite it again. Or I know you spoke to a donor, but the way you spoke to that person was really inappropriate. Or, you know, to get negative feedback every day is very, very discouraging to a new hire as well. So at some point, it is more respectful to that person to say, I don't think this is a good fit, but I want to help you. Also, I like to look around and see if there's another opportunity that's more aligned with this person's skills. Again, if it's the job, or is it the organization? Is this place just not the right place for this person? This person has a different idea of how we do things. And I've seen people come in and just their previous experience, their expectations in a role, you see, are just misaligned with the reality of what the culture and work environment are going to be like day in and day out. And no matter what you do, that person is just not going to be happy.
Yeah. And I think, as we touched upon before, that it starts at the beginning, right? That starts with the job description, starts with the interview. It starts with how you present. We all want to present our organizations as amazing, right? We all want to say we engage 80,000 people in our work, but like, to be humble enough to present the reality to those who want to come work for you, you know, both in your job description and what kind of person you're looking for. And in the interview process, when you're, you know, very blunt, this is where we are in our organization right now. These are the kind of people that we work with. This is the challenges our current staff had, or this is the challenges that your predecessor had. right? The person in this position, you know, really tried to do X, Y, or Z, and it just kind of didn't work out. Or the person before you was there for 15 years and they were awesome at this, this, and this other thing. And that's what we loved about them. And they're really going to be missed, right? Nobody wants to come in, you know, behind somebody awesome, but like to manage those expectations from the beginning can really, you know, help set somebody up where they say, oh yeah, no, this really isn't a place for me. Or like, you know, this is a lot more administrative than I thought it was going to be. Or, you know, not as task oriented, and I'm not a great big thinker or planner, right? To kind of really help the person see themselves actually in that role, not just kind of this pie in the sky as we'd like to see ourselves, or would like to see our organization, or would like this person to do in this role, because we want all of our people to do amazing, great things for the organization. But sometimes it's just managing a letter that gets sent out, or a report of how we did on a particular campaign, or things like that. Yeah, managing expectations, that's a difficult one.
And I think you touched on a number of important points. I think especially once you're made a job offer, asking questions like, tell me about the person who had this job before. And then if they say, you know, if it's a long tenured person, the question is, that's great. And, you know, tell me, are you looking for somebody to innovate in this job or to maintain what that person had been
doing? Yes.
If you have a person and you say the last person lasted 3 months and the person before a year, to me, that's a red flag. In fact, I will ask you as the employer, is there something when you have turnover in one position, do we have that position structured properly? Does this job need more support? Is this job unrealistic? So if I'm following somebody who this job has been like a revolving door, I'm already going to be anxious because maybe they're just so desperate to hire somebody. But what will be success? Now, I like the question that somebody interviewing for jobs asks that employer, what do you consider success to be in this job?
Right.
And I think it's important to really articulate that. I also think, you know, when you are a person who's got tons of ideas and you're working for somebody who loves input, I mean, I am always saying to anyone who's working with me, I genuinely want to hear your ideas. I feel no pride of ownership. Tell me what you think. any criticism. But some people that, you know, are real like, that's overwhelming. I really just want to come in and help you manage your database, or, you know, I don't want to break new ground, and that's okay too. But we really have to surface those things and make sure those expectations are aligned. I do think if you've had great turnover in one position, asking yourselves as an employer, what's wrong systemically with this role is important. But yes, I think people are reluctant to ask very honest questions or to share in a very transparent way during that interview process.
I think the other kind of hard part that I've seen people struggle with, it depends on who you are, right? If you're somebody who, and, you know, also talking the difference between female and male leaders at times, if you're someone who's so in tune with, you know, when your employees are struggling or not struggling and so open to communication and feedback and, you know, all these beautiful things we talk about that everyone has time for, right? Or you're somebody who's not, whose personality is not so in tune to social dynamics and people's interactions with each other and people's emotions, and you're more task oriented and, you know, that's kind of where you focus, that you don't even see the other stuff. You know, how do you still be attuned to that if your personality doesn't necessarily lend itself to naturally being in tune to that?
That's such a good question. I have so frequently worked with CEOs or college and university presidents in particular, who tend to be more reflective and analytical, and also just, you know, very comfortable with making quick decisions, and they're strong leaders. And I will watch this dynamic where they'll walk into a room and they'll share something. Everybody will nod their heads and they'll look at me and they'll say, did not go great. And then everyone will stop me on the way out and whisper to me, I can't believe this is the direction.
Right.
And I'll say to this person, you know, I'll say to the CEO, you know, are you sure? And he's like, but I'm such a nice guy. I'm so approachable. Like, why didn't they tell me? And I say, well, you didn't really give people the opportunity. And there are ways you do that to ensure. And there are people who are not going to say it in a group setting. And you have to create those opportunities. And as somebody at the helm, as a senior person, you do have to make sure you are genuinely inviting difference of opinion and challenge and feedback, because it's not going to happen on its own. You really have to develop that as a culture. and make it specifically comfortable for people to do that. And even then, people may be reluctant to give you honest and open feedback because of the fact that you are the CEO. So it is tricky, but you're right. And people don't see that in themselves. They think that they're very aware and they're tuned into what's going on. A lot of the role that I will play sitting at the shoulder of a CEO is whispering to them and noticing and really sensing the dynamic of what's going on in a board meeting or a leadership team meeting that may have really eluded them.
Right. So that's where the role of coaching can kind of really come in and be helpful mirror to what's going on.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Because also a lot of times it's you give feedback and like, well, no, I don't think that's how it is. You're like, okay. Well, I'm giving you the feedback that's my perspective. You know, it's just not easy, right? We talked a little bit about this before, the ownership you feel over your work and that you want to be doing a good job. And when someone comes to you and says, this isn't as you perceive it to be,
that's
tough to hear. Wonderful. Well, I'm going to kind of bring it back to you a little bit. And not that all of this hasn't been wonderful advice for all Jewish professionals out there, but anything kind of specific that, you know, you can think of from all of your experience and the work that you've done, both in the Jewish community and outside of the Jewish community, just advice for our listeners out there in the field trying to implement these things in the real world.
Just to summarize a few points that we've said, I think that the workplace is complicated and difficult to navigate. And it's difficult to navigate for people who have been in it a long time. And it's also challenging, especially for new hires. And newer entrants to the workplace come with such energy and passion. And they want to be excited and they want to be engaged. And I think it's really important when you're managing that to really tap in. And some of that just comes from how you engage people and your openness and you're sharing with them what you're doing and explaining where the organization is and explaining how this role fits. I think newer entrants to the workplace really want to be involved in that way. And they don't mind so much even if their particular job isn't that fascinating, the tasks, but they want to feel included and in between passion and satisfaction. And it's something to talk about. And I think many people who have been working a long time will describe that their work is satisfying. And a lot of people over time, when I ask them about their jobs, they'll tell me all about the other things about their work. Well, it's convenient. I like the commute. I have worked with many employees, but they never tell me exactly about the work they're doing. It's about all these other things.
Right.
And I think that's about being a satisfied worker. And at different times in your career, that's good. You know, you're balancing maybe children, family issues, whatever those other competing demands. You have a lot of other interests. But I think when you bring newer entrants to the workforce, to the workplace, they want passion. Mm-hmm. They want to feel just totally committed to what they're doing. And passion is really hard to manage. That's a challenge. And I love that. And I love working with mission-driven organizations and passionate people. But we also can't be passionate 24/7. You know, with that passion has to come balance. And talking about that and giving people enough things in their job that they can be passionate about, and also knowing that in every job, there are some things that we have to do that we don't love as much, but that's what work is about. The other thing is, I think that our lives are much more textured. And again, when you think about newer entrants to the workplace, they look for opportunities. They're not looking for a career path for the next 50 years. They're looking for great opportunities. And then when we recruit talent, there's nothing that can be substituted for bringing great people who are excited to work with you and for your organization, and then finding meaningful ways to engage them. So find talent and find interesting ways to engage people. Don't feel tethered by a traditional job description. Don't feel tethered to just replace the person who's leaving. Really think about, what does the organization need now? And who would love to be part of that mission? And I think those things, feeling a little less hamstrung by the traditional recruiting, the traditional hiring practices, is very important. Because again, our newer entrants to the workplace, people in their 20s and early 30s, and again, keying into that is really the success to engaging talent.
Awesome.
Can I say more about that? Or
No, that's great. I mean, you have to be an organization that wants that, right? You have to really be in a place where you want new and excited and passionate and driven, or you want, you know, the person that's going to fill that role and get the work done. So you got to be mindful of what it is that you're, you know, the ecosystem you're working in.
Absolutely. And being honest about that, and honest in the hiring, and honest in the interviewing, and then bringing mm-hmm. people on in a way that that person can be successful is very important. And I also think that people now, their careers are much more blended in terms of volunteer opportunities are much more professional in the kinds of things that they're asking. And there's a lot more blurring of lines, and there's a lot more integration of people's personal interest and passion with their work. I think that creates more challenge and more responsibility on the part of an employer, because people are coming with those expectations that they're going to be both doing interesting work and personally fulfilled. But I think you'll see that people's careers are much more of a tapestry than a ladder in terms of people's careers. So thinking about how you support that and help people navigate that is more challenging. But I think it also leaves a lot more room for really interesting engagement and much more interesting opportunity for people down the road.
So wonderful. So how do you keep it all together? Consulting work is not easy. You're kind of always looking for the next thing. I know you're collaborative and partnership with lots of different people in lots of different areas. What are some techniques and tools that you use to keep it all together?
Well, I think everyone is busy and everyone says they're super busy. And I think if I had a superpower, it would be adding more hours to the day. But I think that it's important to really feel that what you're doing has meaning and that you bring joy to it, even to challenging times, that you feel like you're helping to make a difference. I've been very fortunate. We have a very busy, active home with four children who are also very engaged in lots of things. But our home is a place of love and fun and joy. And I think balance. And I think balance is very important. Finding those things that also give you meaning and not taking yourself too seriously and feeling like you're passionate and what you're doing has purpose, but also that you have a lot of dimension to your life and that you find joy and meaning from multiple sources. So to me, that's very important.
Wonderful. Any kind of last lingering things? We've touched upon a lot of different topics and areas. Any kind of last thoughts that you might have had or weren't able to share?
I guess the last thing I would say is that people should be defining what success is and for what that means to you personally. And I think you can't define that by one job or one role or, you know, one opportunity. I think defining success for yourself as thinking about your past skills and your interests and aligning that with your work, but also finding, as I said, other ways to integrate your passion. Sometimes your passion comes from your volunteer world, from your community activities, and not all the passion can come from your job. So I think when you take a sort of multidimensional approach to thinking about your life, and that your career and your job is one dimension of that, that helps people, again, to put things in perspective, to not put so much pressure on one dimension of their life or on their job. And I think that kind of balanced look at how you're going to navigate your career is much more what we'll need in the future. I think people will be looking for those kinds of engaging opportunities. Some will come through work. Some will come through personal interests. Some will come through family. And together that creates, you know, sort of that meaningful.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for sharing your experiences and all of your insight with us today. I really, really appreciate it, Lisa.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
Change can be hard. We've mentioned this before, but what Lisa helps us understand is the process of bringing new talent and new ideas into our organizations in the most effective way. By being very intentional about what information you are trying to glean from an interview, start with an effective job description. Think about what type of person you need for an open role. It's so critical to finding a good fit. Not just what skills you need someone to have, what experiences they might be bringing, or what tasks that person should be able to complete, but what type of person are they? Are they outgoing? Are they introverted? Maybe a bit more analytical or relational minded, very energetic or very thoughtful? Thinking about these aspects of the person that would fit into your culture best can help this process be more efficient. Also, be realistic about where your organization is, which will help you to define what type of person is needed in that position at the particular time for your organization. Equally important is that once you find that great person, thinking about the way you onboard them. People come to new jobs with passion and excitement and are often met with a stale and flexible culture with few opportunities for their new ideas. What room do you leave to allow for new people to come in and change your organization? With each new person who joins your team, your organization will change. Additionally, who are those people's go-to people when they're trying to navigate your culture and understand exactly how they fit in? Leading Edge recently released an amazing new tool for helping our organizations shape the way we onboard new employees and helping them feel comfortable and get acclimated in a prepared and intentional way. If you've not yet seen this guide, you can find it at www.leadingedge.org. We want to thank our newest podcast partner, the American Hebrew Academy in Greensboro, North Carolina, where intellectually curious teenagers engage in a holistic curriculum. We look forward to sharing our conversation with Glenn Drew, the Chief Executive Officer and General Counsel, in the coming weeks. This program has been funded in part by the Jim Joseph Foundation. Our editor is Nick Bowden of Bowden Sound, and our fiscal sponsor is Jewish Creativity International. You can find previous episodes, guest bios, podcast articles, how to start your own podcast, and more on our website. It's whoyouknowthepodcast.com. This is your host, Michelle W. Malkin. Thank you for listening and have a wonderful week.